Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. You want to have some fun?
Yeah, we want to have fun.
Okay, are you ready? Sing along now.
My name is Stanley Bookman, and I come from the world of ink. I live in a town called Storyville that's closer than you think. Just hop online and you will find my online world of fun. There's stories, poems, and features on everything under the sun. Just type in Stories for Children magazine at .org to the end. Come join me in reading adventures, we're sure to become good friends. So come to the world of ink with me, we'll share a story or two. We'll go all over the world, you'll see, we'll have fun the whole day through.
Follow me to the world of ink.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Stories for Children show here on the Featured World of Ink Network at Blog Talk Radio. This is Virginia S. Grenier, your host for the show, and I am joined with co-host Marcia Casper-Cook and my partner here at the World of Ink. How are you, Marcia?
Hi. I'm good. How are you?
Good.
I'm playing here with my Kindle. I'm trying to figure this out so I can do two things
at once.
Yeah,
Marcia got
a
new Kindle Fire. She's learning that she can do the our studio through it.
I can't,
well.
But I'm shocked about that because I have computers that I have such a hard time with getting on the show because it is it's different, you know, than it is for other things. It really is because it takes a lot more because of the studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We just want to let our listeners know as well that today is Monday, March 31st. It is 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time. And I just did open up the chat room, so if you have any questions or want to interact with our guests today, you're more than welcome to do it through there as well.
I think we lost somebody.
Did we?
We just lost. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, well.
Okay, Margaret. All right. Well, she'll come back on.
Yeah. But before we get into today's show here at the World of Ink, or at Stories for Children, I guess, is what I should say, because that's today's show.
Right.
All right, so we have some upcoming shows.
Whoever we are.
Well, it is the World of Ink Network, but on... So before we
yes, it is. That's why I always say, it's the World of Ink,
The Stories for Children show. We'll talk about the upcoming broadcast here at the World of Ink. So tomorrow, Marcia, you have a show. It looks like you have a romance author on.
Yes, I have Lee Michaels, and well, actually, she had 70 Harlequin romance stories out there, and she teaches, and she writes through another company now, and she's been doing this a long time, so it should be really interesting because 70 Harlequin is not that easy to do. So it's going to be very interesting. But we're going to talk about other things as well, you know, with writing and historical fiction and things like that because that's her new, you know, love. And I think that that will be very interesting because this is, you know, it's very interesting to people. And so many people are writing romance books, which is why I'm glad we're doing this.
So Anne Harlequin Teen, which we'll talk about a little bit today on the show as well.
Yeah.
There's a Harlequin Teen line now, which is basically PG-rated romance that's hitting the YA and the new adult market, which is for your teenagers and early college-age kids. So
that's good.
And that will be so Marcia's show is called A Good Story is a Good Story. It's on Tuesdays, and that will be at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
And we have a show Wednesday. With the World of Ink authors.
Wednesday we have our What is Success show, which is always the first Wednesday of the month. And, we're going to have not everybody's going to be able to make that show, but we'll have the majority of the hosts here at the World of Ink Network talking about their different shows they do here on Blog Talk Radio all the way to what we do when we're not doing Blog Talk Radio.
What would that be? What would that be?
I know. And that will be at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday. And then Fran has her book discussion show Thursday at 4 p.m.
Yes, she has a really – right. You know what? She's got a very, very interesting show. And this is a guy that was the author of Rambo, David Morrell. So that should be very interesting and how that came to be. Yes, that is going to be very interesting. And let's see who else. I think that's it this week, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's what we have so far.
Oh, and the next, I should say, for all the people that like screenwriting shows, we are having one. Rick Freeberg is on, and he wrote How to Make It in Hollywood, and he's been in Hollywood, and he's been there for years. But he's going to try to explain to everybody how tough this really is. And actually, Brian Scott Mednick is coming. A guest we had is going to be a guest host, so that should be exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be a good
show.
And there will,
yeah.
And the Writing Mama show will be back a week from this Monday as well.
Good.
So we'll have that show. And that's going to actually be a fun show because I'm having a whole bunch of blind authors on that show. And I'm yes, I'm talking literally can't see and they write authors. So that'll be a really fun show as well on Monday. Okay, so that's what we have lined up. So today here on the Stories for Children show, which we're starting to do only once a month, and we're doing it on the last Monday of the month, is when we're going to air the Stories for Children show just because we just have too many shows and I needed to to streamline my hosting time here at Blog Talk. So we decided to, instead of having authors come on and talk about their books as writers, we did something a little different. Marcia and I have been talking, and when we've been talking about things that authors need to do to promote, especially in the children's and the young adult literature, to promote their work. And Marcia and I do, of course, World of Ink tours. And back when I first met Marcia, I had Stories for Children magazine, which has been shut down for the last couple of years, even though we still have the issues that you can still buy from the previous years and the anthology. But I had met a lot of different bloggers during that time and authors through the Stories for Children magazine. So when we started World of Ink Network, when we first started doing tours, we focused on children's and young adult authors, helping them market their books in social media and on blogs. And so we decided that we'd ask a couple of those bloggers to come onto the show today and talk with us about what they also, you know, besides blogging, they do some writing themselves, but to kind of talk about the children's market and the young adult market, what, as book reviewers, they see as being good books versus what they consider, what stands out to them as not being as great, in fiction for kids. And to also kind of share some of their favorite books and talk about summer reading, ideas, because obviously summer is right around the corner for a lot of us. So I know we get out of school at the end of May, so when Memorial Weekend hits, school's out.
It's going fast. I mean, believe it or not, it's so fast. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I know some places they wait until about, first or mid-June, which is how it was when I was in California, for school to be out for the summer. But, I mean, it's literally from 1 to 2 months away for everybody for summer. So I want to welcome to the show Brenda and Margaret. They both have been phenomenal bloggers for us at the World of Ink Network, so we thank you guys for that.
Yes.
I'm going to have you guys each share a little bit about your background. So we'll start with you, Brenda. Share what you do, the name of your blog, how you got started into blogging and doing book reviews.
All right. Well, I'm Brenda from Daily Mayo, and I've always liked books forever, and children's literature has actually always been my favorite because I feel like writers have a lot more license to do things that are maybe a little more out of the box than what a traditional adult writer can do with the limited topics. Children are a lot more fun to write for, I think, and often I find that reading children's books is a lot more fun than the adult books. But I started blogging a while ago, but I didn't know a thing about it, so it's only recently that I've actually connected with other people, but I just liked books so much I wanted to review them professionally, and that just kind of fell into that, I guess.
Well, that's you do a lot of things, so this is very interesting that you've added this with your, to all the things that you've done.
Yeah, I also write professionally, too, so not as, an author or anything, but it just all kind of fell together, books and writing and... I'm just a woman of words, I guess.
But we like that. And also, I think, as a reviewer, helps you understand, what you're looking for, too, on when it comes to the actual, style of writing and stuff as well versus, and I'm not knocking anybody who's just a straight reviewer, but I think when you kind of understand both sides of the desk a little bit, too, it gives you a little bit more insight as a reviewer.
So, yeah, absolutely.
But we appreciate that all you do for us with those tours, because I know sometimes we get a lot of books touring and you guys get bombarded. So, and Margaret, I'd love for you to share a little bit about your background, your blog, and what got you into writing, because I know you write as well, and you also do blogging, so you do a little bit of everything as well.
Yes, well, I started out writing poetry, and I decided that I needed a blog, and so I turned to one of my kids who had a blog at the time, and he set me up with a very nice blog, and I guess that was around 2005, and I've been blogging ever since. And I'm a compulsive reader as well as a writer, so I'm always looking for blog fodder, and interviewing authors and putting up book reviews seemed like a very natural fit to me. So I kind of fell into writing children's stories because I hooked up with someone who had a very nice poetry forum, but she required everyone to write fiction as well. And at that point, I'd written no fiction ever. And I have three kids, and they were in their teens maybe at the time, and I'd been reading books to them forever. I decided that it was less intimidating, little did I know, to write children's stories than to write vegetable stories. It turned out to be much better, but that's how I started writing for kids.
Well, and I know I've read some of your stuff, Margaret, I know, because I think you submitted a few times to Stories for Children magazine when we were taking submissions. So I've seen some of your work, and I know we've published some of it in the magazine. So
yes.
You definitely have a talent on both sides of the desk that, you know, I can actually honestly say that because I've seen it.
And you also, but you also offer help to writers because you have different, which I think is real, some of the things you have are really good in here for the, you know, for help, creativity help and things like that. Because sometimes people don't know where to go.
Yeah. I started on the help section of my blog because I'm terrible about keeping track of things, and I wanted a spot to put all the wonderful links I found, and it kind of snowballed from there. I've got a very large section on help for writers.
I think it's a great idea. You know what, and it also is good for you because then every now and then you can look at it because you can't, you know, I don't think people realize how many sites there are for everything. And, you know, everybody has their favorites, but some of them really are very good. So that's good that somebody puts this in like you are putting it in because at least you know what you're doing. And then when they go look at it, it's not a waste of time that it's just somebody trying to sell something. It's actually help.
Yeah.
Because people need help. You know, I think that one of the things Virginia and I see is that nobody wants to ask for help because they don't want to feel like they, you know, don't know anything. But the truth is, there's so many things we all learn, no matter how many years we've been in this. There's always something to learn, I think.
Yeah. Well, my background was not in writing. I started out as a math major in college, and I minored in French. So I had absolutely no background when I started writing, and I had to acquire it. The only thing I had going for me was a solid knowledge of English grammar, and the only reason I had that was because my father was an absolute nutcase on the subject.
Wow. Well, we hear that a lot from people, though. The reason they become a certain way is because their parents made them do things, but actually it works for a lot of people now that when they were younger they think, like, oh, why were we doing this? But actually now it is working.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it stuck with you. It stuck with you, apparently.
He pounded it into us, my sister.
Well, I think that's kind of good in a way.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I want to talk a little bit, because both you ladies offer, you know, basically people to be able to contact you and to submit to you guys to have books reviewed or to, you know, basically help them promote their books. So either one of you guys can jump in when you want, but I know for children's literature, more so than even the young adult literature, it's really hard for a lot of authors to know what to do to get the book out there and kind of, you know, get it in front of readers. I mean, that's probably the number one thing, Marsha, and I get asked the most is, you know, I wrote this book for kids, and I just, besides going to schools and talking about it, I don't know what else to do. So as bloggers, I mean, what can you guys share to help children's authors to get their work out there. So,
right.
You know, so you guys can learn about it, readers can learn about it, you know, so they can...
And so they don't give up and just end it. You know, well, a lot of them give up,
yeah.
though. That's the problem. They give up.
Yeah, a lot of children's writers give up. It is,
yeah.
it's hard, when it's hard to write the dang books and then trying to market it, it's a whole other beast in itself.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would just love your guys' input on some of that and kind of,
yeah.
you know, ways for those authors to kind of learn, you know, and for readers to know, by you guys sharing this too, I mean, any reader listening is going to know, oh, well, this is, you know, another way for me to find some good books because, I mean, I know
right.
that's such a mm-hmm. challenge.
Yeah, that is, yeah.
Well, one of the things that I discovered is that your local chain bookstore may be perfectly happy to promote you as a local author if you go in and you speak to the person in charge and say, I'd like to give a reading, and my book is an e-book, but it's available on your website, and we could have the people come in and listen to me read, and then they would hopefully buy the book from you. And they're quite happy to have events like this at the store. And hard as it is for me to go in and say, will you please let me read in your store, that is actually a pretty effective way to get in touch with local people.
See, that's a good way to say it, though, because we've had this on the show, and that is one way to say it. Because if you say, can I sell my book, that's not going to work, but can you do a reading?
Mm-hmm.
Because that they already know it's not costing them anything to do this, and they really have small budgets. So,
yes.
And that's the problem, because sometimes they think that if you're going to come in, you're asking for money, but really they're not going to pay us anyway, so we might as well offer it free. But a lot of them aren't that nice, though, about it, and they should be, because the kids love to listen to authors.
Yes. Yes, they do. The libraries
the
are another company.
But saying you're going to
yes.
be reading it is a good thing.
Yes.
Well, I was going to say, because I was say, when people, can, at least from what I've seen, when the authors I've talked to have approached stores, I'm like, yeah, I approached stores and say, I want to do an author signing. I mean, basically the first thing that goes up in any books, I mean, I can talk about this, I used to work retail, would be, oh, we're going to set up a table and you're going to sit there and hopefully and have signs up and hopefully people will notice you sitting there. Where I think,
yeah.
you know, saying, let me do a reading, that's actually going to draw attention because people, you know, you're
yeah.
reading out to, you know, everybody walking in the store, even if you don't have people sitting in front of you, it's maybe
right.
two or three people. I mean, everybody hears you. And so I think it creates the crowd as well.
Yes.
Yes, I agree with you. Thoroughly agree with you.
So I think that that's
yeah,
one thing, you know, and I think people are afraid to do that sometimes. And, you know, because unfortunately, you know, being an author, they really treat people so nice a lot of times. Depending what city you're in, they act like, you know, they can't have you. And the thing is, we're not asking for money, any author, when they're usually going to do a reading. And I think they have to change a little because a lot of them have gone out of business. So they should be happy that people are even coming to them. Because that does make people in the store happy. I mean, they really like that. So the, you know, the surroundings for when, even Walden Books, when they were around, they used to like to do this, but they're not around anymore. And Barnes & Noble, they don't like to have it because it's a lot of work to put together a lot of things, and sometimes they don't want to do it anymore because they are limited in staff.
Yes.
And the small bookstores, they really should think about welcoming people, even if they're self-published, because, you know, it's not the word that it's almost like a swear word to people if they go, like, self-publishing. I mean, like, oh, my God. But, you know, maybe if they look at the book, they'll realize there's no difference.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
I find that that's especially true in the children's market. It seems like self-publishing is getting more accepted for adults, but for children it seems still like if you're not, like, in the top three publishers, it's really
right.
hard. To get your book noticed.
Which
That's
would
true.
Only take a little while if they gave a little help. And I think that they are missing. That's why Virginia and I are doing more shows like this, because we realize that a lot of the authors are giving up, and there's always kids that are looking for books.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Definitely.
You know, and I also have done a romance series, and you know what? That is not the only type of writing there is these days. There is other writing. You know, and I do feel like I myself, I had a lot of romance shows, and I still do. But the fact is, I realized that I was having more romance shows than anything else. because it was just a lot of fun and they didn't take it so seriously and everybody's having a good time. However, it's changed. They are taking it seriously and driving everybody insane to buy their books. And they are. Really, they are. So I think it's time
that's what I was going to ask next. I mean, with both of you guys being, you know, in the blogging sphere and obviously tied to social media and all the other, you know, things that come along with being online and blogging, I mean, is there anything that you find is effective and then isn't effective when it comes to people marketing their books? I mean, because obviously when you guys are out there, I mean, if someone's talking about their book and it catches your interest, like, oh, yeah, you know, you might contact them and say, oh, I'd love to read your book. You don't have this blog, blah, 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 blah. Or they contact you. I mean, what do you find works for you when you see that happening when people are trying to get noticed in the social media market of, you know, here's my book, and what do you find to be a big turnoff? Because, I mean, I think that's so important for people to, you know, for any, you know, not so much for readers, but for any authors who may listen to this, you know, who are listening to the show, so they know what they may need to change in their strategy of getting your guys' attention. Because, you know, I see so many people where I feel like they're constantly posting their Amazon buy link. And for me, that's a turnoff. It's like, okay, you're trying to push me to dang buy this book, and I'm tired of it. So, like, what works? What gets your attention, and what turns you off? I'd love to know what you guys, know, think on that.
Well, I like when an author is maybe a little more personal, like they're willing to share more of like themselves as a person rather than just here's my book, buy it, or even here's my book, like review it or whatever. But just that. If they're able to, like, open up and share a little bit about, like, their experiences. Like, I love doing, like, interviews with authors, not even necessarily about their book so much, but just about, like, some of their life in general. I feel like that makes them more approachable and definitely something that I, as a reviewer, am more likely to promote just because it seems a lot more like getting to know the author rather than just pushing what they're selling. I think that could work for both adults and children's stories.
So that again, see, that's one thing that they stopped doing for a while, and so I think maybe that the interviews are coming. Virginia, you know, because you do such a thorough, as you know, and I was not big on doing all those things, right? And I was not thrilled about doing all those things, but I am listening to you, and I do know this for sure that it is probably a much better way than doing it this way, because it wasn't like this even a year ago. It's and all the events that everybody are having that people are going to, and you're giving everything away. They're giving Kindles, they're giving books away, they're giving everything away. And, you know, I mean, I think it's nice if they would like to read your book. I would rather give someone a free book than have to say, you know, this is free. I don't mind. If they want a book, if they don't want to pay for it and they can't, I'll give them a book. But doing all these events, I think I have to, I'm changing my ways. So how do you feel about that, too? After Margaret answers the other question, we'll talk about that, because all these events now are huge. Everybody's having them. Okay, Margaret, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hang on. Oh, I like it when people are personal, too. What I'd like to hear about is what sparked the book. You know, what made you write this book? What in your background went into this story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Because I think, sometimes we try to, you know, we come up with the stories, but sometimes mostly it does come from somewhere. It has to.
I
want to say all of my stories that I have written, that was one of the first things when I wrote my book, Babysitting Sugar Paw. You know, everybody's like, oh, you know, because I'm a girl, obviously, the first in my mouth was, so this is an experience from being a babysitter. I started laughing. I said, no, it's based off Sugar Paw. I was more like him, the kid being babysat. And that really shocked people, because they're like, whoa, so you're writing it from, I said, yeah, I'm writing it from the terrible kid, you know, causing problems for the babysitter point of view. And that really spun when people started talking to me about the book, realizing I'm not talking about as being a babysitter. I'm talking about from this kid's point of view. And they're like, whoa, okay. Yeah. So, and you're right, Margaret, because, you look at titles of books and you think, oh, well, they're writing it from, you may think they're writing it from one character's point of view when they got the idea, even though the story may change from whose point of view it's being told, and find out it came from somewhere completely out of left field that you would not have known if you didn't ask. So you're right. I think... I know for me, when I really like a story, you know, be it kids' books or, you know, mainstream literature, the first thing I do is usually try and find out what got that author into, you know, writing those books, because for me that makes the books even more personable, you know, and where I feel more in tune with why the story was being told, and it creates a bigger universe for me when I read the story. So I like that. I mean, and I agree, Brenda, I think getting to know the authors themselves and who they are, I mean, gone are the days that we can hide behind our typewriters and send our manuscripts off to agents and publishers.
I know.
And nobody know what we look like.
I know. Yeah, you know? I know.
It really is.
You know, that's true, though. I mean, because that was like my greatest fear, is that I would be successful and that I would have to maybe go on TV or talk. And even though people know that I continually talk, I didn't think I could do it. And when we were on Red River, as we were, and she said, read a story, I went like, oh, okay. So I read 5 pages. I was a total wreck. And every time I have a guest on, I know that it is hard. So I think that, you know, you do have to get out there, and so I try to have, like, a lot of times 4 and 5 people on, so the person, it's not on them, where they feel like an hour is all about them, because it gets hard sometimes for them to want to do it. So, and it is really good PR to be on radio shows, because then people can put it on their websites, and people can hear them, and there's something about the personal side of it that really does change everything for the author.
Which brings us to events, because you're just talking about being on Blog Talk, you know, when you did your Rainy Marsh on Blog Talk. So obviously we're seeing everywhere that there are, you know, blog tours and cover reveals and come to this, you know, book release event and event. And I know as bloggers, you guys do probably have events on your blog. What is your guys' take, though? Do you feel like it's starting to become an oversaturated kind of everywhere you turn, there's some event banner or invite somewhere, or do you guys feel like it hasn't gotten to be overkill yet? I mean, what is
well,
your
but guys'
take
but,
on
but Virginia,
because...
for the children's, though, sometimes they say no children's authors.
Yes, that's true, too.
Which is really not nice at all. It's really...
That's very annoying. Even if I don't want to participate, on general principles, I find that offensive.
Yeah. Okay. You know, we have some people in the chat room. If anybody has a question, please call or put your questions in. We'll be happy to answer them. I should give the number, which is area code 714-242-5259. If you have a question.
Yeah.
Because we're all here to answer it.
And
so you find it offensive? That's interesting. See, because. Without bloggers and without reviewers, a lot of the word would not get out. So I think that's interesting how you're taking this, you know. And I have made, like, some decisions, and I sometimes go and change my mind, which we all know. I do change a lot. But I do think two of the things I think are the book reveals are pretty good, because this way you're not exactly writing 100 messages to people. And also when they have their cover on certain sites, I think that's a good idea, because whoever comes in the site sees it, and it's not a lot of money, and this way you're also not Facebooking them, Twitter, and doing everything to annoy them. This way they can really look, you know, at different sites and see different books, and maybe they would read them more, because it's becoming more of like a party time, which I thought was a good idea, and I still do sometimes, but not what I'm seeing lately. You know, the events.
Yeah.
I think definitely for certain genres, like I was talking about how there's everything like romance now or whatever, that seems to be one that you see the events the most. And I think I would like to see more from other genres as well, just because you get...
I think definitely for children's there. And, you know...
Yeah, for children's, there's definitely still one to space for more children's events. But then on the other hand, that would also need to be geared towards children a little more. Like maybe it was, because children like interactive things. So like if you could do like a coloring page or something related to a book, and like maybe a color in the cover or something.
Actually,
yeah,
there's a site
like that could be fun. So.
Actually there is a site now for children's that Boku, two of the girls that are marketing people for Boku. They have, it's adventures and kids books, and that's a good thing. That's a Facebook page, and this is for all children, not just one publisher, children's. And that's about the only, I mean, most of them do say they don't want children's books, a lot of them. And, you know, and Fran Lewis has reviews. We can all go, children's books can go in there, too. And but most of them, and, you know, I wasn't really thinking about it until we're talking today, how many times it does say we don't do children's books. And so if more things open for children's books, the authors will be a lot happier and it'll be more fun. And that's why, Virginia, you're starting up more. We are doing more of these because we know that all of these writers are out there that just have nowhere to go.
Yeah, well, and you know, that was one reason why, you know, we focused first when we started the World of Ink Tours was with the children's and the young adult authors, was for that reason. And, you know, I love Brenda's comment about, you know, having coloring pages and stuff, because I have those for my picture books. So when I'm out, you know, I hand those out, or when I go speak at the school and stuff, I can hand those to the kids, and, you know, of course, my information's on about the book as well. But, you know, I have my two main characters as the coloring pages, and I have those where they can download them from my blog, and I mean my website, not my blog, from my website for the book and stuff. And, you know, I think those are key things. But I'm really careful with, you know, how many event type things I do, because, you know, it is hard to have, and I totally agree. I think romance is probably oversaturated with their event paloozas, because they do a lot of them. But, you know, I do think that, like when a book launches, I think there should be events. You know, I think if you have something cool coming up, you know, that ties into your book or some holiday, I think it's, you know, it's good to have the event. But I know for a while blog hops were starting to get really popular, where people were, and this is a really good one for you guys, where everybody was doing the blog hop events, and I've noticed those have kind of died down, but it was like, I think like almost every week there was like a blog hop happening. And I know we tried it for a while, and it just was kind of like, I felt people were just going to the blogs to say, hey, I went to the blog, and they just leave a note and say hi, but they really weren't reading them. So sometimes I wonder how effective, you know, it is as a blogger for you guys to be involved in those events. You know, is it really driving the traffic? Do you really feel like people are you know, because I feel like when you guys are book reviewers and you're trying to share content, I mean, you know, are people really stopping and reading them like you're hoping, or are you guys getting kind of, you know, feeling like you're doing all this work and people are just popping in saying, hey, just to say they said hey, so they can say they participate in the blog hop, you know?
Right.
You know, it varies. It depends on the reviewer. It depends on the site. There have been some sites that I've appeared on for some of my books, and I track I look at the sales numbers on Amazon, and I can tell that people have bought the book after they visited the site. And there are some that it seems to have no effect.
Yeah, I don't think there's an answer to that. I mean, I've been looking for that answer, and I don't see that answer coming up anywhere.
Yeah,
because I don't know. I honestly do not know how in one day someone can be like 200,000, and the next day they're like 42,000. You know, I mean, and I honestly think this is, I don't even know what to say anymore, because, you know, I sometimes get into that and I go like, how is it not moving and everybody else is moving? And then I'm thinking the one book, the books I don't even talk about, those books sell. So I'm thinking, well, maybe I should just not talk about anything. They'll all sell, you know, and, you know, because I really don't know how this all works. But I do know CreateSpace, they are so much nicer than I assumed. They are really nice to authors, and they are really helpful. And you can talk to them, which I'm big on, and I know I say this all the time. If you can't talk to people and you have some questions, you need to move on, because you have to be able to sometimes have a conversation rather than 15 emails that get nowhere. And by the time you're done with the 15th, either of you don't like each other anymore, because there's just somebody said something that you go, oh, my God. So I think that, you know, one phone call can really help rather than 20 emails, I think.
Yeah, sometimes you don't know the answer, though.
Yeah. You mean you don't get the answer? Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you know, there's so many different ways that everybody's doing things these days, but there is a question that I think that I've heard, and I just talked to people, how about Goodreads? How do you both feel about Goodreads? And what should people do in Goodreads?
Well, I'm a compulsive reader, so I'm always looking for books. And one of the things I like about Goodreads is that I can discover new authors and new books.
Okay.
I have asked for reviews on Goodreads. I have put out some of my kids' books for review, and that does get review, and that does get people interested in looking at the books.
Oh, all right.
Some
people
dislike it. Some people dislike it, and some people say, "Oh, my book's been, you know, spammed," and people are just, you know, giving it a one star for no good reason. And that's happened to one of mine that has a fairly significant amount of gay content. But you know, I've read reviews of some of my favorite science fiction authors, Robert A. Heinlein, for example, and some of the people, my favorite books, they absolutely hate it. So you know, it's a totally matter of taste.
Right. That's the thing. And there's so much to do on Goodreads. I mean, you know, it's like, but when I get in Goodreads, I go, "Oh my God, I can't. I have to leave." Then I leave because I start it and I go, "Oh, this is wrong." And so what I'd like to do, but I do have a lot of people that are following me on that. But I would like to do just start all over again because I think I just can't, you know, because I have several genres and it's like I don't even know where to begin because it's like if you put one thing in, it doesn't. It's not for other readers. So it does get confusing. So, I mean, I just feel like starting all over. I don't know if I can, though, you know. But it's got a lot of content in there, and I don't think people really know exactly what's good for them and what's not. I guess you have to find that out if you can get through it. But it is important to people because people are liking Goodreads. It's just a nightmare when you go in there sometimes of what you do.
There's a lot. I just, you know, figure out, devote a certain amount of time to it, and after that time is up, you know, I'm done for the day.
Yeah, I can finish you off. It's worth it. I'm tired.
Yeah.
Maybe I should try that. Maybe I'll sleep in at night.
Bridget, do you have any thoughts on Goodreads as a book reviewer? What your thoughts on, or do you not use it?
Well, I do use it, but not as much as I could. I think I'm a bit like Marcia and get a little overwhelmed by all of the different options sitting there. Like, I definitely, whenever I remember, I post like my review up there or whatever.
Okay,
but
see,
there's so many different avenues. I think it can get a little complicated on the reviewer side, too. Just because
that's good to hear.
How many sites?
It can be a good site if you have time to spend on it. I agree. I get overloaded. Well, here's one for you guys because we mentioned self-publishing, you know, self-published books, and of course the indie book industry is growing. An indie book, by the way, everybody is anywhere from hybrid, self-published to small publisher. Okay, so I don't want people to think that indie just means self-published. It's hybrid, self-published.
It's not right exactly.
It's a cumulative term for people who are not at the big or mid-sized publishing houses. It's considered indie books. So the indie book industry is growing, the publishing industry, just like the film industry is growing. So I'm just curious, as reviewers, I mean, because I know you guys both do review indie books, I mean, do the authors find you, or do you guys, someone recommends a book to you? I mean, how do you guys find these indie authors? Because, I mean, there's so many of them now.
I asked my friend. I put out on the loops I'm on, I'm looking for people to review, do you have anything? The publishers who publish me, I asked people who, you know, the ones who are published there, do you have anything to review, and sometimes people come to me and say, "I have a book, would you review it?" So I guess it's, you know, every way. I'm more inclined if I know the person, quite honestly.
Yeah, see, because like Virginia, like you were saying about the blasts and, you know, doing different things, because I myself, I know, because now my books are being redone by Boku Publishing, and the reviews that I had, you can't use. And Amazon, I have talked to them about this, and what Amazon does is they keep everybody's books on. It may not be, it's, you know, you can unpublish it, but it's not going anywhere. So if you had reviews on it, it's still staying there, but the object is for them to go to the place that they can buy the book rather than just look at the reviews. And it does get, you know, it really does get hard, you know, especially, I know, Virginia and I mean, we're on the air all the time, but we really don't go in and to everybody and say, I want reviews. And when everybody is getting so many reviews and Amazon is even noticing something's wrong here because they're getting all 5 stars, and I personally think if you get a 5-star, if you get a 4-star, or even if you get a 3-star, it's not that bad. But,
you know,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, I've gotten some 3-star reviews that really talk to some of the points in the book that I was especially proud of, and I was, you know, quite happy that you know, well, the reviewer wasn't in love with, you know, didn't think it was the best book ever, but they did notice the things that I liked about the book.
Well, that's good. Then there's a good review.
Absolutely.
See, I think that's it. Even though it's not 5-star, it's 3-star. There's nothing wrong with 3-star or 4-star.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because, I mean, that's part of, you know, what today's show is about. I mean, because both you guys, you know, do reviews, is, you know, every author always thinks that they, and I've had this on the tours, you know, where someone, you know, where I've had, you know, one of the, you know, blog hosts come back to me and say, you know, look, I have a book, I just want to warn you, you know, I'm going to give it like 1-star, 2-star, or they even tell me I can't even post a review for this because I just can't find anything about this book to say positive, and I don't want to hurt the author's feelings. I can send you the review if you want to send it to the author. And on the flip side, from the authors, you know, they're like, well, I only want, I've had them tell me this, I only want my 4- and 5-star reviews only shown. If anything's less than that, then I'd prefer the blogger not to post it. As blog review, you know, as book reviewers and bloggers, you know, I feel like you can learn from every review, but and that's me, you know, that's me talking just, you know, and from both sides of the fence. But, you know, what is your guys' take? Because, I mean, it takes a lot of time for you guys to sit there and I mean, you read because you enjoy reading, but you're also reading and you're looking for certain things. So, I mean, when it comes to reviewing a book, I mean, what do you feel is the importance of a review? I mean, the things that people need to take into account when they're looking at what people are saying about a book, because I think sometimes people think that, you know, they're just looking for someone to say, oh, this is like, you know, Stephen King, or this is like J.K. Rowling, or this is like, you know, Daniel Steele, or this is like, you know, Koontz, or whomever they want to throw out as big name authors. So some of, you know, because, I mean, that's what authors want, right? They want their book to be liked to somebody that's huge, of course, until they become a big name. But, I mean, there's more to review that, I mean, and I'm not just talking from authors to learn from. I'm talking from avid readers who don't do reviews but are looking for books. I mean, you guys write reviews to help the readers out as well. I mean, what are we supposed to learn from these reviews by what you're telling us? I mean, what's the heart behind a book review so we understand why you guys do what you do? Because, I mean, I don't think people really understand what a book review is about.
Right.
It's one person's opinion of what they think. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it gets pretty complicated because people do want to see a different thing from a review. The thing that the author is looking for in the review is not necessarily going to be what the reader is wanting to learn about the review. And I think that that's what the job of the reviewer should typically be, is to kind of bring the book down to where, like, what the reader would find interesting, like, you know, like if it's like a big name, or, you know, what sort of things they can expect from it so they can know before they make the purchase whether it's going to be worth their time or their money.
Mm. Yeah, that's a very good point. It should definitely, I mean, as reviewers, we can't keep our own opinion out of it, but I know I have certain prejudices in terms of writing, and if someone starts to step on them, I will have a negative reaction, and that's nothing really to do with the book. That's just to do with how I view literature and how I view language.
And I think that issue gets even more complicated now because there's so many different ways to write. I mean, not everybody's going to like a certain style, and that doesn't necessarily, they may give it a negative review because they didn't like the style, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it was bad.
Right. know, because I was talking about that today. I think there's something that, you know, I've noticed myself. You know, I am an agent, you know, for screenplays for years, but, you know, basically when people wrote, you know, it was the script, but when people are writing from different areas, sometimes the vocabulary is different, and it is not the same. So, and I think sometimes, you know, that's up to the reviewer to make that decision, because sometimes if you are writing a book and you think a person talks like that, but they might not, that might be what you're meaning negative. It makes them not sound as well-read or their intelligence if they kind of use the language in a bad way. For the person that whatever they're talking about, because when I used to read script, I say just write it, and whoever does the acting, they'll figure out how to talk. Just write what you want to say, because sometimes I thought it was offensive.
Yeah, but in a book you can't do that because you have to define the character.
No, I know that. And that's
and
hard.
That's why it's doubly hard. Yeah,
but
and
it can get offensive.
And I love that Margaret and Brenda brought this up, because my classic example of this all the time is using Twilight, Stephanie Meyer series, because it is written in that old, and it's funny because I love Mark Twain, I love Dickens, I love, actually I'm right now reading the Sherlock Holmes series again by Conan Doyle, so I mean, and it was that very long literary type writing style, but when I picked up, because... But that's not a huge popular writing style right now in YA. So when my mom told me about Twilight, she's like, "Oh, you need to read it," and I was like, "Okay, fine, give me the first book, and I'll, you know, if I can't get into the first 100 pages, then it's not a book for me." Which I couldn't. I wanted to like rip out chapters and pages of the book. So I was going, "Oh my gosh, you're going on forever and ever," which was the old writing style, which is how she writes. But for me as a reader, I don't mind reading the classics because I expect it from the classics, but I don't want to read like a now-day author that does that. It drives me nuts. So I can't stand that series whatsoever. And it's not because – and I'm I saw the movies, and I know there's huge changes in the movies. And so, but the main storyline is still the same from book to movie. Even though there's changes in the movie, there's more action because that wasn't her thing. She didn't really write battle scenes from what I heard in the series. I've had many friends who've read it who've told me that, like, "Oh, the movies are different. There wasn't that many fight scenes," because she'd always back off on those things in the book. And I was like, okay, but I love, but the main...
Yeah, but,
the
she,
main
but, she was
the main,
probably, but they didn't write the screen. She didn't write the screenplay, so that's the
no,
different
other
author.
No, people did, because, well, they did. They had other people write it. But the core storyline was still in the movies, obviously, because if that changed, people would be, like, you know, totally appalled. So the main storyline of the Twilight series I actually enjoy because I enjoy the movies, but I can't read the book because the writing style that Stephanie Meyer has drives me nuts. And it doesn't mean the book's bad. I just, for me, it's not a book for me. The story's a great, I mean, the overall story, the premise is great, but I can't read it in book form because I just want to blow my brains out. So I love that you brought that up because I think that's what happens. People read reviews, and that may be the case, like what I just used, you know, using the Twilight series as an example, and people think, oh, it's a horrible book, or, you know, this person hates my book. Well, no, maybe it's just, you know, your particular voice for the book that the book reviewer can't, you know, come to terms with.
Exactly.
Well, no, I mean, because people do view things differently. I mean, 10 people can read the same book or go to the same movie, and it will be different how you feel about it. You know, even when my husband and I go, I'll say, "Oh, I liked it because I'm looking at it a different way for creativity," and he's like saying, "Oh, this was not a good story at all in his eyes."
And here's another classic example using that literary form of writing. I love Lord of the Rings. I love Hobbit. I've seen the movies. The movies are great, but I prefer the books, and it's that literary style of writing. But for that kind of epic fantasy, I think it works better. For vampire love romance book, doesn't work for me.
Yeah. And it all depends on who's making the movie and how or whatever. It really does matter, you know. And it's just the preference of different people, because it's not the same. I mean, they can have the same movie and do 3 or 4 versions of it, and some people will like, you know, one version, where they won't like the another version, and that's what happens. But I guess, you know, that's what the world is about. But reviewers, and they do have a right to not like a book.
Yeah. Do you guys have any examples of that for yourselves where you've noticed that?
Well, I can't remember the name of the book, but this very intricately plotted book about the Vatican that everybody loved. Mm-hmm. I absolutely hated it. I read the first chapter and I put the whole series down. That was the end of it. And I could never get into I could never get into the Douglas Adams books. I just couldn't stand the style.
Yeah. It's just everybody has a preference, and that's just the way, you know, that's really what makes the world go round in some ways. And, I think,
and don't feel bad. I prefer the movies over the books as well from Dan Brown. But my husband prefers the books over the movies, so there you
go. Well, see, that's right. Right, but that's in the same household, and two people, you know, and that's how it is. That's, you know, that's why there's DVR now, where everybody can either watch it or not. You don't have to watch same things anymore.
And I mean, again, this is a non-kids book, unfortunately. I liked, this is actually a kids book, like the Stephanie Meyer one, but I loved the Ink Heart, Ink Death, and Ink Spell books.
I love those too. I love the books.
But when they did the movie, I felt that they had, and it needed to be long and very written in that literary kind of style. But she was really good. I still think that she was still very good about, at times, making it choppy too. You didn't always feel like you were always reading literary writing, but it was like a nice blend, I guess, between like modern day writing and like the old style writing. But the movie, I felt they chopped it up so much that you didn't really understand the storyline at all when the movie came out.
Yeah, it definitely, it could have been one of those trilogies, but just one of the books.
You never know sometimes how it's going to turn out. You know, when someone says they're going to take a movie from a book, it's not going to be the same. Even if the person is the same person doing both, but mostly it's not the same. So, you know, a screenwriter has a different take, and a screenwriter doesn't have time a lot of times to put a lot of detail into it. They just, you know, you're in a room, that's it, what time it is, and that's who's there. And then you just go for the dialogue. But in a book, there's so much more, and it's involved.
And I think particularly with Ink Heart, that's where most of the beauty of the story was in her description. So translating that to the movie, it was a little difficult to promote the same feeling through the dialogue.
Right, I think that is what happens. It just changes.
More of it. Yeah, you get more of it in the book. And
I love what you just said, too, that, you know, the beauty of the book was in the description. And I think that's, you know, sometimes kind of, which is how I felt about Lord of the Rings. I felt the description, that was the beauty of the book, which is why I love that literary style of that book, where when I was reading Twilight, I'm going, the description was more like her whining, and so I felt it wasn't needed.
Let's see if we can get her on the show, Virginia. Let's see if we can get her on the show, Virginia.
You know, she lives here in Utah with me.
Let's ask her.
I'm really worried one day she's going to drive down here, since I'm only about 4.5 hours from where she lives, and she's going to, like, show up at my door and knock and go, will you please quit bashing me on your show?
Well, let's give her a shot if she wants to come on.
I love, don't get me wrong, I love Stephanie Meyer's imagination. I love her premise for stories. I think it can be shorter in the actual book form. That's all I'm saying. That's just my opinion.
I was talking about that. Somebody was saying that, I think that's what's happening in a lot of books. Sometimes, because there's a lot of new authors out there and a lot of authors that, you know, sometimes a story doesn't need 400 pages. It needs 200. So when they put things in a story that is absolutely, they're repeating it or it's not necessary, an editor needs to go in and just chop it up, because I hate to say that, but that's true, because it doesn't always have to be. And like some movies, if they're 3 hours, they really don't have to be 3 hours. It could be 2.5 hours. They can get rid of it. You know, there's very little that you cannot chop of anything.
Wait, Brenda was chiming in on that. What was that, Brenda?
Oh, I said her 9 hours, like The Hobbit's going to be.
I don't know why they're making The Hobbit into 3 movies. It's not that long of a book.
It's a franchise. That's why.
I know, but when I went to go see, I was just, I'm like, oh, The Hobbit's out. And I'm thinking, it's just going to be a 3-hour long movie for the whole book. And when it ended the way it ended, My husband had to, like, put his hand over my mouth because I was, like, I swear to God, I was cussing. I was so mad. And he's like, why are you getting so worked up? I'm like, there's no reason to drag this movie out. There's no reason to drag the book out. It's just going to make people frustrated. And then when I saw the second movie, I'm like, okay, so they're just going to slaughter, you know, Smaug. And when then he didn't, I was going, really?
Yeah.
I thought at least we're going to get rid of the dragon by the end of the second movie, so the third movie would just be the war of the five armies. And
that's
I thought, too. What? Yeah.
Well,
I
sometimes
would,
when a book is very hot, they make it into something that it's not, and it could be just one. It could be just one book.
I know, but here's the thing, and I will, and I'm a huge Tolkien fan, and when I talk about writing, when I actually go out and talk about writing, I tell people, if you want to know which type of writer you are, or the type of, you know, reader you are, meaning do you prefer plot-driven books versus character-driven books, I'm like, go read Tolkien. You read Lord of the Rings and you read The Hobbit. And if you come back and you tell me you like Lord of the Rings, you're plot-driven. If you tell me you love Hobbit, you're character-driven. And 9 out of 10, people tell you they like Lord of the Rings, which is, if you look at most books are plot-driven, not character-driven. Hobbit's character-driven. Most people don't like Hobbit because unless you're really into character over everything else going around and you really want to know what's the internal idea, what's going on in someone's head, which most people, which most people don't. Most people like the action, which is plot. Most people have a hard time reading Hobbit. Hobbit's a very hard book to read. Most people don't like The Hobbit. So that's why when I was like, you're dragging this into three movies, are you trying to make people hate Hobbit more? You know? It's because they're trying to make it a plot-driven movie, and I watched the movies going, it's not a plot-driven book. You can't do that. It just doesn't work.
Well, but see, that's the problem. That's because sometimes the people in power really make the decisions that really shouldn't be there. But that's what happens. And in the old years ago, I think Robert Wagner was on, I think, a Queen Latifah show, and he wrote about old Hollywood and whatever, and he was talking about the fact that the studios used to make different decisions than are going on right now, because actually when you have the writer, producer, director, the same person, sometimes they do what they want. Or they have a producer that probably shouldn't be in there making decisions. He's making decisions or she's making decisions that maybe aren't exactly right for the movie, but they have the money. So it changes. It's all about that sometimes of what you see in a movie. Because, you know, that's why a lot of people do say, oh, I like the book so much better, because what they did to the movie is not exactly what they came to see.
Well, the Hobbit movies are enjoyable. I'm just saying it's character-driven. It's all about Bilbo. It's not about the dwarves. It's not about the dragon. I mean, those are just kind of there to, like, help propel the character-driven storyline of Bilbo Baggins. And they're just... I mean, they had to literally add stuff into the movie to tie, and I know that they did also tie Lord of the Rings, but I'm going, you're making this a plot-driven movie, and it's not terrible, but it's like right on those fringes that if they make, I'm really worried about, when I got to the second movie, I was like, they're pushing it. I'm really worried how it's going to end because they're really on that. I'm falling into the canyon now.
Now, here might be a question for both. You know, when you're reading a book that you've really liked and then you see later on that a lot of people haven't liked that book, how do you deal with that? Because you might feel like saying, like, what? Because it's almost like if you reviewed it and you really liked it and somebody else is looking at it and they're reading it and then they give it a really bad review, how do you feel about that for the author?
I just think it's, you know, it's a matter of taste. Hey, I once lost a job because I wore boots to the interview. The interview didn't like. And that taught me a valuable lesson that you can't make people like and say the things that you like.
That's a great analogy.
Well, that probably is very true, though. If they don't like it, right.
Well, and also I say, as bloggers, because you guys are posting your reviews on the blogs, I mean, people make comments. So, I mean, as a blogger, how do you guys deal with that when someone's like, I really hated this book? I mean, and I'm not saying that they're doing the hate, you know, comment post, but, you know, they're definitely strongly disagreeing with your opinion. I mean, how do you guys handle that? Because, I mean, even on Amazon, people can comment on your reviews, and I know that's probably not an easy – because – as a writer, I mean, you feel already personally attacked when someone gives you a one star. I mean, how do you feel as a reviewer when somebody's attacking the fact that you like something or you hated something or even hated a book and they loved it? I mean, when they're on opposing sides, I mean, how do you guys deal with that?
I try and bite my tongue. I honestly do.
I don't find that it bothers me. I mean, people just have their own opinion, and you could get upset, I guess, but it seems a little silly, I guess, in the end. Because, I mean, definitely, I'm sure there's tons of books that you don't like that somebody
right,
else
right.
Their favorite book,
you know, you said the magic word, ridiculous, and that's right. Because, and that is why I am sure that readers out there are so confused these days because they actually don't know. You know, because someone has 105-star reviews, and then they read it, they go, oh, my God, this was a horrible book. I mean, and then they kind of go, like, how did that happen? And
can I mention a book that's not a kid's book that was like that? 50 Shades of Grey. I am sorry. And I know it's not a kid's book. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I'm bringing up the R-rated book on the kids' show. But I'm just saying that there's one book that everybody was talking about, and I was just like, I was like, I'd rather read Playboy over this. So, I mean, and I know there's, I know there's, well, I actually, I won't say who's.
Well, that's why
it,
a lot of people
actually
read the first book and not the second and third.
Yeah. Well, and there's a kid's book, and I won't say the kid's book title because it's just my opinion, but a lot of people really liked the book, and I picked up the book, and I just went, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And I won't say who it is because I know the author personally, so that's why I'm not going to say the title.
Yeah, right.
Because I don't want a phone call later, but,
well,
you know.
Right, that's what, right. That's why I don't review books. That's right. I don't get in any trouble. I don't review anybody's books. Because it's a tough job, you know, but there are people that really rely on reviewers. So I hope that some people realize that some of the people out there reviewing the books really aren't reviewers, because not everybody on Amazon is a reviewer.
Well, and that's
and
that's
they're just
you,
people reading
ladies.
A book.
Yeah, I mean, when you guys are posting reviews, I mean, here's another thing too. I mean, I see where people put like one or two sentences. It was a really great book. My kids were really entertained. We read it, you know, all night long, and it put them to sleep. And I'm going, wow, you know, I don't feel that's really a review. I mean, what do you guys feel is when you're looking
right.
at reviews, what do you feel is a valid review in your mind to make you go, I want to read that book and review it myself too?
What I liked, what I didn't like, why I didn't like it, why I liked it, what I thought were the good points, what I thought were the bad points for me, and to be honest about this, if this when something is pushing my buttons.
Mm-hmm. I guess I do a similar process, and that's what I would look for too. But I'd break it down by like the subject material, like the plot or the writing style or whatever, because I think it's helpful to know kind of what you're getting into before, not so much necessarily just the opinion of the reviewer of whether what they liked and didn't like, but just like kind of what they expect stylistically. Because,
yeah.
I mean, there are different styles that you're going to not like, so that book wouldn't be a good fit for you.
So when you guys write reviews and when you look at reviews, you're not looking at like the two-sentence, three-sentence paragraph. You're looking for like the 3, 4, 5, 6 paragraph.
Definitely
the
more in-depth one is. Because, I mean, you always have the person that posts like the one star that's all like, I hated it. And then there's the 5-star right next to it that's like, I loved it. And you're like, okay, well, now what?
Exactly. I see that a lot on Amazon and Goodreads, and I'm going, well, that doesn't help me know if I should read this book. Okay, so I'm glad you know.
Well, that's the problem now. That's exactly it. Because I think what people should remember is this is for readers. And readers need to know, and sometimes the reviews aren't really geared toward the reader.
Mm.
Because somebody
point.
That gets a book, they're looking for a different. They're looking for you to say, well, it's for kids. If it's, you know, kids will like it at a certain age, they'll laugh, they'll whatever. But sometimes if they just say nothing, it doesn't do anything for the reader, the wanting to or somebody wanting to read it to their kids.
Yeah.
Especially
if they're
kids, but I think it's helpful to have something like that, like you're saying with the age or whatever.
We
might
have a caller, Marcia.
I think we do. I think,
in.
Right, yeah, we could, yes. Right, and
all right.
Before we go, yes, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so caller 4945.
And Marcia, please, you don't remember. I'm
it's
sorry.
MJ.
I'm sorry I'm so late, but I got a conference call with my editor, and, you know, you can't hang up from those, so.
Well, you could. You could, but they're not going to be happy with you.
I know.
System, Margaret, this is RJ, RJ Jeffries, and he is also one of our hosts, but he writes, and he's very, very in tune with the whole review dilemma that we talk about a lot on here. So welcome to the show, RJ. It's great to have you here.
Hi. Is there anything you wanted to talk about or ask? Jeff?
Well, I wanted to say that Brenda, is Brenda on the line? Is Brenda on the call?
Yes.
I'm RJ Jeffries, or R. Jeffries on Facebook. I'd love if you'd follow. I can't add any more friends, but we have a commonality. I can't say it on air because I use my nom de plume, but and I want to say any more, I'll give it away, but we share something which is quite uncommon. So I'd love to commiserate and speak with you about that on Facebook.
Okay. What did you say?
Well,
well, my nom de plume is R.J. Jeffries, and if I say any more,
okay.
Give away the secret. So we
okay.
Should have
okay.
A common.
We'll get you in touch with
well,
yes, we will definitely
I
get
will,
you in touch.
Yeah, I will.
I saw
RJ,
that.
Well,
I've got to find out about this person.
Yeah, I will send you her contact information because she's one of
perfect.
Our blog tour hosts. So I will get that connected for you guys.
Well, I'm just curious what everyone is involved with now. What's their most recent project? What do they love about the craft, and what drives them to distraction?
That's a loaded question.
Well, I was
going to
say exactly the same thing.
You know, and why do we even do this? I mean, who would think that, okay, I'm going to sit by myself for hours at a time and have this mindset, oh, I'm going to do this so people are going to read it and have the audacity to say, watch them buy it.
Yeah.
You gave that job description to anybody else, they go, yeah, what are you smoking?
You guys want to chime in on that, on what projects you're working on right now and what you guys have coming up?
Well, I'm working on a fourth science fiction novel, and I just started writing the fantasy.
Wow.
That's exciting. I like science fiction and fantasy. What do you think about the science fiction romances that are like appearing now?
I wrote one. That's my third
you
novel.
You did write
and,
one.
Well, I didn't set out to write. I started to write science fiction because I wanted to overcome my phobia about world building, and then I wrote the first one, and then the character said, "Well, what about this?" So I wrote the second one, and then there was the question about backstory in the first novel that. I kept thinking about what happened to this character's former partners, and that's how I ended up with the science fiction romance, because I needed to answer that question.
Well, that's a good answer, because sometimes that's really true, because sometimes it's very interesting to know why somebody does something when they're writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'd love that
question. Yeah, I mean, I didn't...
Do you outline? Do you know how it's going to end? Do you progress with your characters and come to an ending together? That always fascinates me, the writing process for people.
I have about a page of notes. I mean, I know the beginning, I know the high points, I know the end. Some of them I have more notes than that, but generally it's never more than three pages, and then I start writing. I've got planned only a couple of scenes ahead, in detail,
right.
Only a couple of scenes ahead,
yeah.
Typically. And then sometimes I find I've been wrong and I have to go back and rewrite it.
Right.
Marcia, when you're writing your screenplays, do you have the same mindset? Do you have all your characters, of course, in place, I'm sure.
What I do for a screenplay is I try to write through to about, you know, like page. Well, when I get to 25, I already know that I can do the story because you only need like 90 to 100. But when I get to page like 70, usually what I do is, because I want to make sure everything fits, because I get very neurotic when things don't fit, because I hate in movies when you don't know what's going on and you go, what happened to that person? So at 70, I go back and start the beginning and go all the way through, and then by the time I then get to 70, I know where I've been, and then I can do the next part of it, which is the end, working toward the ending and making sure that I don't forget anything.
That's a good idea. All your structure, sound, the floors are in place, the walls. Yeah, that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, well, for me it works, because otherwise you have to go back and forth, and you don't maybe get some of the parts that you need to finish it up.
Yeah, because continuity is such an, you know, I've written plays myself and I've written some things for screen. Continuity, that is the operative word. You've got to have continuity. If you get lost writing, your reader or listener or viewer, whoever sees it on stage or film, will be completely lost.
Right.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. I mean, when you guys are reading, you know, books and doing your reviews, I mean, can you tell when
Well,
no, because I was going to say there's so many authors that I've talked to recently that tell me they just sit down at the computer and they start writing. They don't do the, you know, as Jack Remick has said many times when he's been on here on the World of Ink Network, the writing before the writing. So I'm just curious, like, does that, like, scream out at you guys when you're reading other people's work?
Sometimes I can tell if someone's writing something historical, like, and that comes out blatantly. If they haven't really fleshed out a scene, I can tell that as well. If they spend a lot of time on minutia, I feel like they're just padding. So those are some indicators. As an editor, those are things that stand out very. You can see them from space for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you? What were you saying, Brenda? You were saying you noticed.
Oh, yeah, I think that definitely, to some extent, it's clear, mostly like Jeffries was saying, that you can just kind of tell that it's just more fluffy, I guess, and padded, and they take a while to get to the point sometimes, maybe. I think definitely having more of an outline in place, even if it's not a big one, but just definitely having a goal. I think that the kind of random writing maybe can help you solidify, like, what you do want to write about, but then once you get to that point, you kind of discover that idea, then it's extremely helpful to make your outline at that point.
Yeah, but I think you might say this, too, because you might see that sometimes when people are doing this, they write the book and they don't go back. I've heard this a lot. So if you don't go back, then they have the editor redo everything for them because they know they have problems and they don't want to figure it out themselves. So they let someone else do it. That's how they get so many books out so fast.
Margaret, did you have a thought on that?
I think there's a trade-off between outlining and editing. And I think, for me, the process has to balance my comfort level with outlining, being willing to then go back and edit. If I haven't worked it out in detail, I have to go back and fix it.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I mean, I think that it's going to be one or the other. Either you're going to outline in detail or you're going to go back.
Yeah.
Do you guys see more of the fluff and padded writing more in the and I'm not trying to pick on the different, you know, industries or between the big and mid-sized publishers versus indie authors, but do you see that more in one versus the other? I don't want to say that. I mean, because I do see. Trust me. I mean, obviously, Stephanie Meyer was published by a big publisher, and I feel like there's a lot of fluff in hers, but in her book. But I'm just wondering, do you guys feel like you see it more in one versus the other? Do you see it more in the indie industry, or do you feel like it's pretty balanced between the two? And it's just more, you know, RJ, you're just talking about as an editor, it stands out for you. But I mean, I know some editors, obviously, because Stephanie Meyer's book went to print, that it doesn't bother them. So I'm just kind of wondering if it's balanced between the two, or do you think it's more in one versus the other?
Question. I think that a good story will be a good story regardless of where it's published or how it's published. I think that depending on what if someone's voice is clear and they've put down and committed to their best work, it will shine.
Yeah.
You know, if you have an editor being your writer, not just your editor, but writing for you, maybe that your editor is a better writer than you are, and you should switch places.
And also, there is a really nice thing when you do work with the editor all the time, because I work with Jeff Fleischer all the time, and I feel confident because I know how good he is, that I know that he will find something. And I might get mad at him sometimes, and I'll go, like, what do you mean? And then he says it, and I go, like, you're right. And I know that he's right. And sometimes it's amazing. Even when I did my romance, I'm thinking, well, maybe he won't know what I'm talking about. He knew exactly what I was talking about and what I was doing. So there is a comfort when you do write and the same editor does edit your work because they know you.
Right, Marcia. And your good editor that you work well with will tell you what you need to hear, not what
yeah.
you want.
Right. Right, right. We did a screenplay together, and he said we didn't argue. I think we did because we were talking. He was saying the male point of view. I was saying the female. But it, as it worked out, it was great because naturally the screenplay didn't have to be edited because he is an editor. So it worked out really well. But while you're doing it, yeah, you know, a good editor will say, like, no, that's not true. You know, or like I know in this there were a lot of, it was a horror film, so we did a lot of superstitions. He goes, where did you come up with it? I go, I lived with a family with superstitions, so it was easy for me to just come up with superstitions because that's what I grew up with. And he kept saying, really? And I kept saying, really? You know, but, you know, and but while you're working with them, it is a comfort when they do know you, I think.
Well, they know your work, and they know where you're sort of going off track because they become as familiar with you as your work. It, they become one and the same, and it's essential, which begs the question I must ask of your guests. Do all of you work with an editor, or do you just show it to, like, maybe a writer's group or something, or do you have someone with a second pair of eyes to look it over and give you feedback? That's essential. I don't care where you are in the game. Every writer I know that's, you know, number one, number two, New York Times bestsellers, they all work with the same editors, and that's not done until the editor signs off on it.
Yeah.
I work with an editor. I wouldn't. I have, the only thing I self-published was a book of poems, and I got someone to edit it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't publish it otherwise.
Yeah. I barely like to write a sentence, but I'm learning how to do that because I even when he was away and out of town doing assignments, I would, you know, send him things because I was not, you know, secure enough to know that because I know I'm not an editor, and I really wish people would realize that they're not editors, and they say they are, and that is a problem.
Well, that's a good question to pose to Brenda and Margaret. I mean, because people who are avid readers or even, I don't know how to put this, I guess, like, you know, wordsmith is the word I'm going to use, you know, so basically more like on a proofreader scale. Can you guys pick that up when you're reading books and doing reviews that they have somebody who is more of like an avid reader or more of a wordsmith versus an actual editor on their book?
I can tell if someone has a badly edited book, and I find that just so annoying I want to hurl the book across the room.
Yeah.
That's one of my pet peeves.
I would definitely agree that.
What, Brenda?
I was just saying I agree that a good book can be, I suppose, under-presented by lack of appropriate editing.
That's a good way to put it.
The editing is definitely an important part.
Yeah, because I've had writers tell me, they're like, oh, well, if it's a good story, you know, people overlook the editing, you know, and I'm going, well, if you have typos, like punctuation or spelling errors or, you know, I think sometimes with grammar, because it could be, you know, character just, you know, that's the way they talk is with bad grammar.
Right.
I mean, we all use bad grammar normally when we speak anyways. I mean, that in dialogue I can oversee, but I think when there's a lot of typos and stuff, I mean, to me it glares out. I'm just wondering, I mean, when you're reviewing a book, does it glare out so much at you guys that it detracts from the story? Because I've had writers tell me that, well, it won't, even though they'll notice it won't detract from the story because the story plot's so great. And I'm going, I don't know if that's really true.
That's not true.
To me, that's analogy, going outside with your underwear on the outside.
Yes, I've taken
book reviews because you sweated over how many hours? In years, sometimes 3 or 4 years. And why it makes no sense to me why someone would say, okay, I'm done with that. It's fine. Let me hand it over to you. Do a little editing on it. Throw a cover on it and get it out there. Get it on the shelf. Get it. God, I would be mortified, even one typo in one of my books.
Okay, Virginia, I think we have somebody that said something in the chat room. Do you see that?
Do we? Okay. It says, it's the end of the story that ignites me. I know where I'm going. So when I have to decide how to start and who to include in the story, depending on the plot, that is why I wrote my two published books and also why I'm working on some others, is our comment.
It comes down to the fact that if a reader walks away and the ending doesn't really intrigue them, then that's what happens. Then they don't get the good review.
From my icon, from my idol Ray Bradbury, are you drunk with your writing? Are you in love with it? I mean, do you sit down and think? Here's a 7-year for writing coach, and people ask me my advice, and I give it to them in a very succinct way. I say, write what you most would want to read yourself.
Yeah.
Write what you
yeah.
would want to
read. Well, I think that's
fine.
True.
If you don't, really like it, you can't connect to it, how do you think expect your writer, your reader's going to do the same?
I think that probably is true. Yeah,
that when I like it, you have to love your own writing, or why bother, you know, at some
yeah.
point.
Even
well,
if you write the most characters, you know,
yeah.
the most dastardly people, you still have to find something about them you like, or your reader won't either. They'll just be mean all the
time.
Yeah,
yeah. There's so much it entails. I mean, you know, that's why, you know, this is a really good show to have because, you know, we're getting on the subjects that really people need to hear. And so I'm hoping when, you know, it goes in archives, a lot of people will listen to this because this is
right.
really about writing.
Well, it is about writing, and it's why readers like, you know, the writing that they read. I mean, you know, just like the comment we just had about endings. I mean, I know why a book hooks me, but when I come to the end of a series, I mean, like right now, and this isn't a kid's series. I'm sorry, guys, and I know this is a kid's show, but like right now, I'm reading The Dresden File, and the next book's coming out, and man, I'm very excited. And there's only one book in the whole entire series, which was called Ghost Story, that I was very upset about. That I felt that. Was kind of pushed out by Jim Butcher to keep the series going, and maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I felt about that book, because the ending didn't really, I didn't walk away from the book like holding on to the ending, and to me it's like after I read a book, that ending needs to hang with me to when I go to bed at night, I'm dreaming about it in my sleep, because
yeah.
it just grabbed me that much, it lived with me that much, which we're getting to the show, so I really would love Brenda and Margaret to share kind of what some of their favorite young adult and children's books are, and you know, for the summer, because I know a lot of people are starting up book clubs for the summer, especially for kids to get them reading. I know a lot of libraries are doing like the mom and teen book clubs as well. So
yeah.
you know, because of crossover books are really popular. So I would love for you guys to share some of the books that you guys are enjoying that you hope maybe some of our listeners that love to read. And as writers, we should be reading more than we write, by the way. And that's not a quote from me. That's what Stephen King tells you. So,
is that not the truth? That should be true.
Well, if that's the truth, then I'm in great shape.
Well, I must say that I do love writing screenplays. So, I mean, I do like writing books, but I do love movies. I can't. I love movies.
But
and
we're not talking
just,
movies, Marcia, so we need a little
bit. But what I'm saying is I'm not
books.
Reading as much. I'm watching movies, and that's how
well,
I improve
sense.
My writing.
Well, and that makes sense. Well, as a screenwriter, that makes sense. You should
but
watch
I'm also
more
writing books.
Writing.
So to me, because so not everybody does,
yeah.
you know, I read as
yeah.
much as they would like, and that's why, you know, the kids have to learn how to do this. I mean, I think it's important for
yeah.
kids to do this.
Marcia,
you
write,
so,
it makes sense you would gravitate to film.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll have Brenda go first. So, Brenda, go ahead. Share with us what some books people should be looking into to read with their kids, or maybe get some book clubs started on.
Well, I guess what I like in the summer, I always feel like there should be more of a spirit of adventure in the summer. So, whenever I was younger, I would always read like mysteries, and I think that's a really fun genre to read with kids in the summer because they can kind of, it's sort of like school, almost.
Well, they have
to
think. So they have to think.
Yeah, you have
yeah.
to think about it. You're using a part of your brain that you wouldn't necessarily use in the summer. And it's always, I like books that feature hygiene.
Are there any
so,
specific titles?
Like specific books. I gravitate more to the classics for the mysteries. My daughter, she loves The Magic Treehouse. That's probably the newest series that we're reading right now, but I've always loved the classic ones like Encyclopedia Brown and The Boxcar Children. Those are just, they're short too, which makes them manageable for a child that maybe wouldn't mm-hmm. really want to be reading in the summer, which is what I really definitely think that's an important
For kids,
like,
right. I think sometimes for
kids
yeah, for
yeah.
short, right, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
But
Margaret?
And
do you have any? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Brenda. I didn't realize you were done.
Oh, no. I was just going to say also the fantasies. There's a lot of really good fantasies out there for kids right now that have the adventurous, makes it mm-hmm. reading more fun in your off hours.
Can I put in a plug for my...
I wanted you to say, before we forget, I just want to say one thing.
Okay.
Do you want to say, you have some shows coming up, and I know you do, and I think,
we'll,
you know.
We'll do that at the end.
I know, but
Marcus,
I heard him
though.
Wanting to say this. Maybe he wants to get off. Okay, so I think he might want to get off. So go ahead.
No, I just wanted to highly, I could not recommend more highly a book by my dear friend Melissa Starter called Six Species of Ejida, and the accompanying book, a workbook with it, My Ejida. It's a great workbook. It's a great series about Annalise. It's kind of like if you would take Alice in Wonderland, add a little bit of Tim Burton's direction in it with just a very magical and very spiritual experience. It's worth filming, describing just how well-written this book is. It's now just been released in audio version. It's actually used by therapists for play therapy. So once again, it's 6 weeks of Ejida. That's Y-E-H-I-D-A by Melissa Studdard. That's with two D's. S-T-U-D-D-A-R-D. Studdard. And it's also a best-selling book. So thank you,
Lisa. Margaret.
Hey, Margaret, what about you? What do you have for us?
Well, I've always liked to read to my kids folk tales. And summer is a great time for that. One I particularly like and still remember is called Rikki Tikki Tembo. It's about this Chinese kid with a very, very long name who falls into a well. And it supposedly explains why Chinese have short names. It's just so funny.
I've never heard of that. I still
remember
something like it. I'll have to check that out. I'm a huge folktale person, so I'll have to check that out. I have, like, all the folktales and all the old fairy tales. I have, like, complete collections, but I haven't heard of that one, so I'll have to check that one out.
There are also a whole collection of African folktales that a lot of people don't read that are absolutely wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Those are great tips. Do you guys have any tips on, like, people getting book clubs started? Because, I mean, some people don't have libraries that do book clubs. So, I mean, do you guys have any suggestions on how they can go about getting one started? Because I think sometimes people feel kind of like, well, I like reading, but, you know, sometimes they want to talk about the book, like, you know, like we were just talking about earlier, like, you know, why they think the author wrote the book or the idea behind it. And so I'm just kind of curious, do you guys have any suggestions on that?
I think then go back and visit your library before they become extinct, before they become back to the
business.
Yeah,
no kidding.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's
really
cutting. Cities and towns with this horrible economy, which won't recover. Visit the library. Do readings there. I love that. Bring anything you've got. Bring someone else's book. And go to the library and say, could I do a reading? Watch them skip and jump.
I am going to do that because I think it really is important, and I think that I will be doing that.
It's a great experience, and it's a win-win. Kids love it. You know, you can contact school principals in your town. And you can do readings at school, in the library at the schools, or in the lunchroom. Absolutely that. Google's a great tool to find writers' groups in your area. And even you can post those and start, you know, in the library, post them so readers come in and say, oh, look, there's a writers' group. It's a great place to recognize and to get people. Because I think book clubs are just, they're the best.
Yeah.
Best support of us writers, and also a great place for us to join.
Yeah. Any other tips?
Yeah.
Nope.
Nope.
I
wasn't sure if we were talking about adults and children.
Children books, you know, clubs. I mean, because I think sometimes people think that book clubs are just for adults, and they're not. I mean, like I said, at my library, they have parent and children clubs where they're, you know, reading a lot of the crossover kind of YA novels or new adult books. So I know.
You know, and also, you know, to Margaret and Brenda, both of you, if you have books that you really think are good, and, you know, and or even, you know, if they have a message that's good or if they're you just enjoy them, just send them. You can send them to me, you know, or Virginia, and we can put them on our blogs because this way people will get to see things they might normally not see.
Mm.
And I think people are always looking, and sometimes they don't know where to look, but they do come on our site, so that would be a good thing, maybe.
Right. And we do. We help cross promote, you know, for your guys.
Yeah, we do.
When we do tours and stuff. But we'll even if it's not a tour book, you know, definitely let us know. We'll still do that for you.
Yeah,
guys. And we're
yeah,
because
I think sometimes people don't do tours,
today.
But they have a good book or you've read a good book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we thank Brenda and Margaret for joining
thank
us
you so
today.
Much.
I mean, it's been fun having you guys on here and having you guys
talk
about
it.
It's
been a lot of fun for us too.
Yeah, it was great meeting you guys. Yep.
Yeah. Thanks. It was loads of fun.
Thanks. So we just want to quickly let our listeners know what's coming up here at the featured World of Ink Network here on Blog Talk Radio. So tomorrow, Marcia has her show, A Good Story is a Good Story.
It's actually in the afternoon tomorrow. It's 3. It's 3 Central, 4 Eastern.
Yeah, 4 Eastern. And then we have the What a Success Show Wednesday. That will be at 8 p.m. Eastern. We'll have RJ Jeffries, Marcia, myself, and a few of the other hosts from the World of Ink Network. We'll be talking about what we do, our shows. So that will be exciting.
Willow Cross, Bennett Pomeranz, and I think that might
we'll
be
on
it. Yep.
And Irene Roth will be on it. And then,
Irene will be? Okay,
Thursday,
good. Right.
Yeah, and then Thursday will be Fran Lewis's show book discussion. And then, RJ, did you have anything you wanted
yes,
to
he does.
Share with our listeners?
Yeah, well, I guess just a little bit ahead of the game, but in June, I'm going to have the absolute joy of interviewing the cast of the Muffin Top movie. It's more women in front and behind the scenes in this film than any film in Hollywood in the last at least three years.
Really?
So I have having Bruce Cameron on, who wrote it, who also, I think his book is number 8 on the New York Times bestsellers list. That's Bruce Cameron, and his lovely wife, Catherine Minshon, who's a wonderful comedian and actress who stars in it. And I think I'm going to see if I can nudge David Arquette to join us, too, because he was also in the film as well. So that's for June.
Yeah, it's good.
Either this month or next month, I'm going to have Sigrid Fry Revere. She's, talk about it over. This woman's amazing. She got a doctorate, PhD, and a law degree within the span of 2 years.
Wow.
And then she went to Iran undercover for a year to find out about why there was such a shortage of organ transplants and people were dying by the thousands here with kidney transplants, and snuck into Iran, spent a year there to evaluate how they did and why there was actually a surplus of organs in Iran, wrote a book about it in the story, and she's going to be my next guest. So I'm very excited.
I know, that sounds so interesting. Very good.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
You guys have such interesting shows.
Yes,
well,
definitely.
We're
very interesting, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm going
to
ask her what possessed her with a law degree, and also she also was in Washington, D.C., at the Bioethic Institute, the director of that. What possessed her to all of a sudden say, okay, I'm going to just go to somewhere, Iran of all countries, surreptitiously and hide undercover for a year and do this research and then write a book about it?
Which is not an easy thing to do.
No, not at all. Well, we'll talk more about that come
Wednesday.
All right,
that's
well,
good. All right.
On the What a Success Show, yeah. So all right,
thank you. It was fun.
On the show and our listeners for tuning in. And, you know, join us, you know, every week. We have shows almost daily here at the World of Ink Network. We're a featured network here on Blog Talk Radio. And thanks for listening.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night, Marcia. Thank you. Nice to meet you, Brenda and Margaret.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you too.
Follow me to the World of Ink.